It's time for the Des Moines Register on Thursday, February 22. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. My name is Twyla Glenn, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Linda Lundgren. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Register. According to AccuWeather across the state, it should be turning sunny and mild today, breezy in the afternoon. Winds northwest 8 to 16 miles per hour, clear tonight. Winds west-northwest 8 to 16 miles per hour. And the forecast through the weekend for central Iowa looks like this. Today and tonight, mild today with some clouds, then sunny, breezy in the afternoon, winds northwest 8 to 16 miles per hour and clear tonight. A high today of 60 and a low of 32. On Friday, cooler, becoming breezy with a high of 46 and a low of 20. On Saturday, a high of 53, a high of 34, sunny and breezy in the afternoon. On Sunday, should be sunny and milder with a high of 62 and a low of 39. Looking at precipitation, in the 24 hours through 4 p.m. Wednesday, we had zero precipitation. The month to date, we've had 42 hundredths of an inch against a normal of 95 hundredths of an inch. Our year to date has been 2.33 inches against a normal of 2.03 inches. Last year at this time, we'd had 2.39 inches of precipitation. In snowfall, in the 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday, we've had zero. Our month-to-date, 4.2 inches against a normal for this date of 8 inches for this month. The season-to-date, we've had 34.2 inches, and the normal season-to-date, we would have had 28.5 inches. Sunrise today was at 7:01 a.m., sunset tonight, 5:56 p.m., moonrise today, 4:11 p.m., and moonset today at 6:31 a.m. Turning now to the front page of the Des Moines Register, the headlines read, Teamsters deliver a labor bill protest, Religious Freedom Bill passes the Iowa Senate, and a woman spreads the word to find a kidney for her husband. Now here with the first story is Linda.
Well, I'll read the story about the Teamsters, and this is accompanied by two pictures on the front page of a vehicle caravan that they had circling the Capitol yesterday, and then they also had some speakers outside of the Capitol. While about 100 horn-honking Teamster vehicles circled the surrounding streets and an airplane pulling a banner circled above, the Secretary-Treasurer of the Union's Local 238 in Iowa, Jesse Case, brought his heated rhetoric about what he calls union-busting legislation to the Iowa Capitol. We're not taking it anymore. This is the beginning of an escalation, and it either stops or continues to escalate. But we're not going to take this laying down, Case said from the State House steps on Wednesday, flanked by union officials and Democratic legislators. We're standing up. We're fighting back. We're united, and this is just the beginning. Frustrated by the latest proposed legislation pushed by Republican senators, the Teamsters staged a rolling caravan around the Capitol with vehicles ranging from semi-tractor trailers to small SUVs. Many carried "Stop the War on Workers" signs while overhead. The airplane pulled a banner reading "Kill Senator Dickey's Union-Busting Bill," a reference to Senate Workforce Committee Chair Adrian Dickey, Republican from Packwood. The Iowa Senate is expected to take up the controversial bill affecting members of public sector unions, Teamsters among them, this week. The proposal is the latest legislation in a years-long string under Republican legislative majorities to draw the ire of organized labor. The bill would amend legislation passed in 2017 that requires public employee bargaining units to hold a recertification vote about 10 months before the expiration of their existing contracts, allowing members to say whether they want to continue to be represented by a union. It would close what Dickey described as a loophole that enables an agency that doesn't want to require a recertification vote to avoid it and sign a new contract with a union, but by not submitting a list of employees who are eligible to vote. Under the bill, the union would automatically be decertified if the employer didn't submit the list within 5 days of the deadline to do so, and it would be up to the union to go to court to seek a ruling to require the employer to submit the list. Squarely in the crosshairs of Case's message on Wednesday were Dickey and Senator Jason Schultz, Republican of Schleswig, who have spearheaded the drive to pass the bill. Suggesting further action the union may take, Case said hundreds and hundreds of Teamster-covered public employees across the state are illegally on call for emergencies without receiving pay, and that they may not answer calls anymore outside their normal shifts. "We're going to call Senator Dickey or Senator Schultz the next time the sewer backs up or the water supply is going to go down in the middle of the night because employees are not obligated to work for free," he said. "These are the people that keep our communities going strong, and these are the people that are under attack by Senator Dickey and Senator Schultz, and we're not going to take it anymore. All these people go above and beyond the call of duty. Why would they continue to do that when they're under attack?" Case asked. He also left the door open for rolling strikes. Even though it's illegal for public employees to strike in Iowa, saying the union is raising money to pay fines. "We're looking at all options, but there's other ways of doing it," said Case, reiterating that public employees could stop answering calls to work in emergencies if they are not paid to be available. Case said the union also would be taking its message to Dickey's hometown in Jefferson County, in the form of caravans, picketing, and news conferences, noting that there are a lot of union-affiliated workers in that area. Dickey defended the bill regarding recertification votes in an email to the Des Moines Register on Sunday. "The bill that they are using as a rallying cry is nothing more than a technical cleanup to legislation that was passed in 2017, Dickey wrote. "Last year, 41% of Iowa public sector workers that had union representation did not have a voice due to a loophole in the legislation passed in 2017. If the public sector employer and the union are following the law, nothing will change for them."
So-called religious freedom bill passes the Iowa Senate. The Iowa Senate has passed a bill that Republicans say will protect religious freedom, but that Democrats have described as what they call a blank check to discriminate against LGBTQ Iowans and others. The Senate voted 31-16 to pass Senate File 2095 on Tuesday. Every Republican president was in favor, while every Democrat was opposed. Republicans have consistently introduced similar religious freedom bills since taking control of the House, Senate, and Governor's office in 2016, but Tuesday's vote was the first time such a proposal has passed the Senate. I believe that it's time for Iowa to add a Religious Freedom Restoration Act to our code, said Senator Jason Schultz, a Republican of Schleswig, the bill's floor manager. Senator Liz Bennett, a Democrat of Cedar Rapids, described the bill as an attack on the LGBTQ community. I stand before you today as a queer woman and an Iowan, and I'm proud to be both, she said, and I'm sick and tired of my community being the target of mean-spirited discriminatory bills written by Republican politicians, she said. Bennett said she's been an evangelist for Iowa, encouraging people to move to the state, but she said the bill would take Iowa in the wrong direction. If this bill had been a law when I graduated, I would have had to think about whether an employer could have asked me intrusive questions about my private life and deny me employment or even fire me, she said. I would have had to think about whether a landlord could deny me housing or evict me, she added. The legislation would say that state and local government shall not, quote, substantially burden, end quote, someone's exercise of religion unless it is in furtherance of the compelling government interest and the least restrictive means of pursuing that interest. A person, corporation, church, foundation, or other entity whose exercise of religion has been burdened would have the power to go to court to seek damages or other means of redressing the harm against them. The bill defines exercise of religion as action substantially motivated by one's sincerely held religious belief, whether or not the exercise is compulsory or central to a larger system of religious belief. That's the end of the quote from the legislation. Democrats raised concerns that people or businesses could use the law to circumvent civil rights laws by citing religious beliefs as justification to deny services, housing, employment, or other public accommodations to LGBTQ Iowans or other minority groups. This legislation is not about restoring religious freedom at all, said Senator Zach Walls, a Democrat of Coralville. This legislation is about allowing some people to cite their religious beliefs to violate the basic civil rights protections that all Iowans benefit from. This bill is a direct assault on the basic idea of equal protection under the law, he said. The federal government passed a Religious Freedoms Restoration Act in 1993, and about two dozen states have their own version. In one high-profile case, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 2014 that Hobby Lobby could cite a religious belief under the federal law to refuse to cover birth control for its employees' health insurance plans. Schultz denied that Iowa's bill would enable discrimination. This bill does only three things, he said. It gives you a cause of action to go to court. It gives the court instructions to apply a compelling interest test, and then if there is a compelling interest, then it is the least restrictive means possible, he said. Business groups have opposed similar bills in Iowa for years, and several business groups and chambers of commerce urged lawmakers not to pass this year's bill. Lobbyists registered against the bill include the Krauss Group, the Technology Association of Iowa, Principal Financial Group, and the Iowa Chamber Alliance. Senator Janice Weiner, Democrat of Iowa City, said individuals and businesses in other states have used similar laws as what she called a blank check to discriminate. Weiner said Iowa would lose out on economic opportunities and investments and struggle to attract workers seeking more welcoming states if the bill passes. We were facing a historic workforce crisis. We must do things that will draw people to Iowa, not push them away, she said. Senator Jeff Taylor, a Republican of Sioux Center, said it seems like the bill's opponents see it as what he called some kind of a plot by conservative Christians to discriminate against people. But he said the legislation would benefit people of all faiths, not just conservative Christians. This is not religious specific, he said. This is going to benefit everybody. An identical version of the bill advanced through a committee in the Iowa House. It must still pass the full chamber before it could go to Governor Kim Reynolds for her signature.
Woman spreads word to find kidney for husband. A Des Moines woman has been working desperately to help secure a kidney transplant for her husband for the second time in 4 years. Jessica Ramirez, a mother of four, has gone above and beyond to spread the message for her husband across Des Moines and the state of Iowa. Residents may see her driving her Chevy Tahoe with a written message on the back of her rear windshield that reads, "Someone I love needs a kidney, type O." Not only does Ramirez use her car to spread the message, but has gone to social media, posted several flyers on stop signs across the city, and wears a shirt to work that says her husband needs a kidney. With more than 2 months of looking for a donor with no success, times have been tough, Ramirez said. Despite the lack of luck, she remains optimistic. "I've been kind of down the last few days, but not defeated," Ramirez said. It's not the first time the couple has faced the challenge, Ramirez said. In 2020, her husband received a transplant after health complications, but it didn't last long. Her husband, Galdino Ramirez, has been working full-time, despite having the disease, to support their 4 children. A 15-year-old daughter, a 12-year-old son, a 10-year-old daughter, and a 7-year-old son. "I want him to have the best quality of life," Jessica Ramirez said. "I want my kids to have the best version of their dad, which entails the best version of me. I really believe we'll get there." Kidney disease, also known as chronic kidney disease, is when a person's kidneys are severely damaged to the point that they lose their ability to filter blood and keep the body healthy, according to the National Kidney Foundation. Kidney disease affects an estimated 37 million people in the United States, which is about 15% of the adult population, according to the foundation. Waste can build up in the blood as the disease progresses. Some symptoms of loss of kidney function include nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, muscle cramps, fatigue, chest pain, and high blood pressure, according to the Mayo Clinic. There are 613 people on the waiting list for organ donations in Iowa, said Heather Butterfield, Director of Strategic Communications for the Iowa Donor Network. Out of the 613 people on that list, 537 are waiting for a kidney. The Iowa Donor Network is a nonprofit organization that operates as the state's primary contact for organ, tissue, and eye donation services. There are over 100,000 on the waiting list nationally, and the large majority of them are in need of a kidney transplant, Butterfield said. There were 192 kidney transplants, 130 from deceased donors, and 62 from living donors performed in Iowa in 2023, Butterfield said. There are a couple of options to donate while a person is alive to help people like Jesse Ramirez's husband. One option would be directed donation, Butterfield said. Directed donation is the act of finding somebody you know who is in need and donating your kidney to them directly. Another option would be altruistic donation, she said. Altruistic donation, also known as anonymous donation, is the act of donating your kidney to a stranger. "Just wanting to donate isn't enough," Butterfield said. "You have to be a match." To help Ramirez, a potential donor would have to contact the transplant center where he is listed, Butterfield said. In Ramirez's case, that's the Iowa Methodist Transplant Center. The phone number, 515-241-4044.
And that wraps up the front page stories from the Register. We'll turn now to the Metro and Iowa section. Biden picks 2 for Iowa's U.S. attorney posts. More than 3 years after taking office as president, Joe Biden has named his picks to serve as the U.S. attorneys for the Northern and Southern Federal Judicial Districts of Iowa. The White House announced Wednesday that Biden is nominating Matthew Gannon, formerly a senior official in the Iowa Attorney General's office, as U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Iowa, which covers the northern half of the state, including Dubuque, Cedar Rapids, Fort Dodge, and Sioux City. For the Southern District, which includes the Des Moines Metro, Davenport, and Council Bluffs, Biden is naming Davenport Attorney David Waterman. The U.S. Attorney's Office in each district is responsible for prosecuting federal crimes in its jurisdiction, as well as representing the federal government in other legal matters. Appointees are nominated by the President and must be confirmed by the Senate. Biden has been slow to make nominations for many positions, leaving them to be filled by acting attorneys under Department of Justice regulations. There are 93 U.S. attorney positions across the country, and with Gannon and Waterman, Biden has now announced 76 nominees to fill them. Biden's top prosecutor pick for Southern Iowa is an attorney at Lane Waterman LLP in Davenport. We're talking now about David Waterman, where he, according to the firm's website, he is the fifth generation of his family to practice law. Notable alumni of the firm include his uncle, current Iowa Supreme Court Justice Thomas Waterman, and his father, Bob Waterman Jr., a former president of the Iowa Bar Association. David Waterman's practice includes white-collar criminal defense, civil litigation, regulatory compliance, and appellate work. Before joining the family, Waterman worked for 4 years as an assistant U.S. attorney in Florida. He also previously did stints as a law clerk for Iowa federal judges Mark Bennett and John Jarvie, both since retired, and Judge Michael Malloy on the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. He received his law degree from UCLA in 2013. The current U.S. attorney for the Southern District is Richard D. Westfall, who has served since President Donald Trump's appointee, Mark Kirschbaum, resigned in 2021. Reached for comment Wednesday, Waterman said he is honored by Biden's nomination and looks forward to the confirmation process. Bennett, now retired as a judge and teaching at Drake University, said Waterman was one of his most impressive clerks during his time on the bench and remains a good friend. He's terrifically bright, very fair, has a keen sense of justice, and I think will make an excellent U.S. attorney, Bennett, a nominee of President Bill Clinton, said Wednesday. One of the things that's most impressive about him is he's very fair and open-minded, so he'll listen to arguments from all sides before he makes his decision. He just has impeccable credentials and excellent judgment, Judge Bennett said. Jarvie, also now retired and in private practice, had similar praise for his former clerk, calling him intelligent, experienced, with a passion for justice. Some nights I'd be coming home from someplace else, I'd drive by the courthouse at 10 p.m., and I had to stop and tell David to go home, said Jarvie, who was nominated to the bench by President George W. Bush. He's such a hard worker, Judge Jarvie added. And who is Matthew Gannon? For the Northern District, Biden has picked a deputy to former Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller. Gannon worked for the Attorney General's office from 2007 to 2023, including from 2021 to 2023 as First Assistant Attorney General. From 2007 to 2021, he led the section responsible for the Attorney General's tobacco enforcement efforts and was one of the office's leading experts on election law. Gannon stepped down after Republican Brenna Byrd defeated Democrat Miller in the 2022 election. Reached Wednesday for comment, he said he was honored, humbled, and appreciative of the nomination, and like Waterman, he looks forward to the confirmation process. Miller praised Gannon's nomination, telling the Register his pick was one of Biden's best appointments, and he's made a lot of good appointments. Miller went on to say that Gannon has got enormous legal abilities, incredible judgment of how to handle cases and people and legal situations. Especially, he's able to combine the need for enforcing the law with a sense of fairness, said Miller. Gannon received his law degree from the University of Iowa in 1998 and spent 9 years working for multinational law firm Arnold & Porter in Washington before joining the Attorney General's office. Timothy T. Duax is the current U.S. Attorney for the Northern District.
Teacher accused of sex abuse of ex-student. Relationship allegedly lasted several years. An Ankeny Middle School teacher was arrested and placed on administrative leave Wednesday morning for an alleged inappropriate relationship with a student that lasted for several years. Rachel Elizabeth Whiteside, 34, who was listed on the Ankeny Community School District's website as a math teacher at Northview Middle School, was charged with sexual abuse, 4 counts of sexual exploitation by a school employee, and lascivious conduct with a minor. The investigation began when a district employee alerted the Ankeny Police Department about allegations of an inappropriate sexual relationship between Whiteside, who also is a softball coach, and a former student that began in 2015, the police department said in a statement. The relationship had continued for several years, and the victim recently reported it to school officials, police said. Whiteside allegedly groomed the student and carried on a multi-year sexual relationship that started when the victim was 14 years old, according to an application for a search warrant filed in court records. The relationship continued until the victim was 23 and included instances of sexual intercourse in Whiteside's classroom, according to the allegation the victim submitted to the school district. An email with the words, "Happy Anniversary," that Whiteside sent to the victim on January 14, 2022, confirmed that the relationship had started 7 years before, when the victim was in ninth grade, according to court documents. Whiteside had used her role as a teacher and coach to make the student share intimate life details, according to a criminal complaint. Whiteside also provided gifts to the victim throughout their relationship. She also kept photographs of the victim in her classroom and had kept a note written by the victim when she was a student in middle or high school in her desk drawer, according to court documents. The Ankeny Community School District sent a notice to parents early Wednesday morning about the arrest. It did not name Whiteside or list the charges. "In any misconduct allegation, we are shocked and disappointed when the highest standards of education are not met and the critical work of educating students is undermined," the district said in the statement. Whiteside has been put on administrative leave pending the investigation, district officials said in an email to the Des Moines Register. Whiteside's profile has since been removed from the district's website. Whiteside turned herself in on Wednesday morning at the Ankeny Police Department and was transported to the Polk County Jail. The court ordered Whiteside to have no contact with the victim or anyone else under the age of 18. She's being held on a $100,000 bond and will have her first hearing on March 1st.
School board is implored to reverse a layoff decision. Students, staff, and community members packed the Des Moines School Board meeting Tuesday to ask the board to reverse its decision to lay off 42 community school coordinators. For an hour, the board and Superintendent Ian Roberts listened as people spoke about the positive impact the coordinators have had on their lives and frustration over how officials have handled the situation. The community school coordinators are tasked with growing school and community relationships in an effort to improve students' academic outcomes and increase families' participation in the school community, according to the district's website. East High School senior Reagan Park was among the dozen or so people who addressed the board. "Many students in the Des Moines public school system lack adult accountability within their lives," Park said. "And the CSC," that would be the community school coordinator, "is a prime guide for these students. Without the needed support at home and the lack of knowledge of the resources that are available to them," he said. I'm sorry, I turned the wrong page. These, continuing with that story now, these students can range from those who are new to the country to those experiencing food insecurity, Park said. The 42 coordinator positions are not part of the $14 million the district must cut ahead of the 2024-25 school year, Robert said after the meeting. A large part of the coordinator positions are funded by federal COVID-19 funds, which are slated to end in June. Additional funding comes from grants. The program existed pre-COVID, but the coordinator positions were increased to meet growing needs. Many of our community's school coordinators are aware that the funding stream would sunset and they would have to find other opportunities, Robert said in an interview. Before public comment, the superintendent told those in attendance he had spoken with a number of the coordinators about the change in their employment. I couldn't help but express my sincere regret and apology to our community school coordinators, he said. I expressed the regret and apologies because of how it was handled, all of this in the last 3 years, by school district leaders. He admitted communication around the issue could have been better. So far, the district has found a way to keep 28 of the community school coordinator positions. My team and I have spent an inordinate amount of time and will continue to do so, exploring, exhausting every opportunity funding to make sure that we are providing as many teammates as possible with opportunities, Robert said after the meeting.
Rocket slide at Union Park slated for major upgrades. And this article is accompanied by a picture of the rocket slide. Work on the 52-year-old play structure to include a rubber surface and replacing the slide. Treasured for generations, Des Moines Rocket Slide play structure is going through major renovations so it will last for generations more. Des Moines City Council on Monday approved starting a nearly $582,000 project to rejuvenate the 52-year-old Union Park Rocket Slide on the city's northeast side. The construction work includes resurfacing the playground to a rubber material, replacing the wraparound slide with a newly built custom version, and repainting the entire structure. The construction work and a fresh coat of paint will make the playground look as good as it did on day one when it was installed over 50 years ago, City Parks and Recreation Director Ben Page wrote in a text message to the Des Moines Register on Tuesday. Built during the space craze of the 1960s, the Des Moines Astro City opened in Union Park, which is on Thompson Avenue, on July 23, 1971, to scores of expectant young people eager to journey through its interstellar design. The 107-foot-long, 32-foot-high structure weighed nearly 7 tons and cost the city $6,200. Today, city officials believe the cost would be closer to $300,000. The playground has been a city fan favorite for more than 5 decades, surviving many renovations and even an attempt to tear it down in 1992. Most recently, the playground closed in 2023 due to age and damage from use, though City Parks and Recreation Department officials vowed, quote, it will be back. Last fall, vandals damaged the slide after allegedly starting a fire, but city officials said it wouldn't incur additional cost since the slide is slated for replacement. On Monday night, Council Member Linda Westergaard, who represents the neighborhood where the park is located, said she was pleased to move the item to prompt the council's vote on construction. She joked that she expected her colleague council member, Chris Coleman, to join her down the new slide once completed. "I'll be on it," Coleman replied. "I worked my way through college at Union Park. I love this project. Construction is slated for completion by the fall of 2024.
Well, that's really good news to me. My middle-aged children have great memories of that slide from when they were little tots, so I'm glad to see that. Moving inside the Metro and Iowa section now, which states are the people who are moving to Iowa coming from? Interstate moving is at an all-time high, according to a study by Storage Cafe. In 2022, a record-breaking 8.2 million Americans moved across state lines. Whether it is for a better job, more affordable housing, or just for a change of scenery, more Americans are taking longer routes for their new homes. Data from 2022 shows that Iowans gained nearly 3,000 new residents that year. The state has welcomed a diverse influx of new residents, predominantly comprised of millennials. The average age of newcomers to Iowa is 32. Newcomers are mainly coming to Iowa from other parts of the Midwest, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. So which states are Iowans moving to? But Iowans are leaving the state, too, migrating to places like Illinois, which counts 9,000 movers, Texas, where 8,000 Iowans moved, Missouri, 7,000, and it says that Iowa's net migration from 2022 was 2,977, according to the study. So what were 2022's magnet states? The South predominates in strikingly evident The South's predominance is strikingly evident, according to Storage Cafe. Only a few non-Southern states make the top states for net migration gains. Here are the top five. Florida had a net migration, that would be in migration, of 238,000. Texas had a net in migration of 172,000. North Carolina had a net in migration of 79,000. Arizona had a net in migration of 77,000. And fifth on the list was Georgia, with a net in migration of 74,000.
Alabama hospital puts pause on IVF after ruling. Ruling that frozen embryos are children creates concern. And this from Montgomery, Alabama. A large Alabama hospital has paused in vitro fertilization treatments as healthcare providers weigh the impact of a state court ruling that frozen embryos are the legal equivalent of children. The University of Alabama, Birmingham, said in a statement Wednesday that its UAB Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility has paused the treatments as it evaluates the Alabama Supreme Court's decision that a cryopreserved embryo is a human being. "We are saddened that this will impact our patients' attempt to have a baby through IVF. But we must evaluate the potential that our patients and our physicians could be prosecuted criminally or face punitive damages for following the standard of care for IVF treatments," the statement emailed by spokeswoman Savannah Copeland read. Other providers in the state were continuing to provide IVF as lawyers explored the impact of the ruling. The ruling by the all-Republican Alabama Supreme Court prompted a wave of concern about the future of IVF treatments in the state and the potential unintended consequences of extreme anti-abortion laws in Republican-controlled states. Patients called clinics to see if scheduled IVF treatments would continue, and providers consulted with attorneys. Justices, citing language in the Alabama Constitution that the state recognizes the rights of the unborn child, said three couples could sue for wrongful death when their frozen embryos were destroyed in an accident at a storage facility. "Unborn children are children, without exception, based on developmental stage, physical location, or any other ancillary characteristics. Justice J. Mitchell wrote in Friday's majority ruling by the all-Republican court. Mitchell said the court had previously ruled that a fetus killed when a woman is pregnant is covered under Alabama's Wrongful Death of a Minor Act, and nothing excludes extrauterine children from the act's coverage. The ruling brought a rush of warnings about the potential impact on fertility treatments and the freezing of embryos, which had previously been considered property by the courts. Groups representing both IVF treatment providers and patients seeking fertility treatments raised alarm about the decision. The Alabama Supreme Court decision partly hinged on language added to the Alabama Constitution in 2018, stating it is the policy of this state to ensure the protection of the rights of the unborn child. Eric Johnston, an anti-abortion activist and lawyer who helped draft the constitutional language, said the purpose of that was more related to abortion. He said it was intended to clarify that the Alabama Constitution does not protect the right to the abortion, and eventually laid the groundwork for Alabama to ban abortions when states regained control of abortion access. However, opponents of the constitutional amendment warned in 2018 that it was essentially a personhood measure that could give rights to fertilized eggs.
Car chase with speeds up to 140 miles per hour ends in a crash and an arrest. An Illinois man is facing numerous charges after allegedly leading law enforcement on a high-speed car chase through central Iowa that started late Monday night. The chase began after a 2023 Chevy Camaro was pulled over by Iowa State Patrol and West Des Moines Police for speeding on Interstate 80 at Hickman Road. The driver gave police a false name and then sped off, according to court documents. The chase headed east, reaching up to 140 miles per hour, and ended in a crash near the exit ramp for Highway T-22 in Jasper County. Sergeant Alex Dinkla, spokesperson for the Iowa State Patrol, said the driver was taken to a local hospital before being taken into custody. The driver is a felon and has active warrants for burglary in Florida, court documents say. The man smelled of marijuana and showed signs of being impaired. Law enforcement also located a substance resembling marijuana in the vehicle and rounds and a magazine for a 9mm handgun, court documents say. The driver is facing five charges, including eluding law enforcement, owning a gun as a felon, possession of marijuana, operating under the influence, and providing false identification. The driver also is facing multiple traffic-related offenses.
Well, going back now to the main section, who in Iowa benefits from student loan forgiveness? More than 150,000 borrowers nationwide had their student loans canceled this week, thanks to a $1.2 billion forgiveness signed by President Joe Biden. This loan forgiveness, announced by the U.S. Department of Education on Wednesday, targets a specific group of longtime borrowers enrolled in the department's repayment plan, which adjusts monthly bills based on income. This came just a day before a group of federal negotiators is set to discuss broader plans for even more student debt relief. This is the first batch of forgiveness to come through since the department sped up its timeline last month for implementing Biden's income-based repayment plan, Saving on a Valuable Education, or SAVE is the acronym, S-A-V-E. From day one of my administration, I vowed to fix student loan programs so higher education can be a ticket to the middle class, not a barrier to opportunity, Biden wrote in an email to eligible borrowers. I hope this relief gives you a little more breathing room. Iowans who are paying down their federal student loans owe an average of nearly $31,000, according to federal data, meaning Biden's announcement to forgive some debt could make a sizable dent in their payments. In January, the department reported there were 68,400 borrowers in Iowa enrolled in SAVE. It's unknown how many qualified for the round of forgiveness announced this week. To make the cut, Iowans needed to have been in repayment for at least 10 years on federal student loans of $12,000 or less. Loans will be reviewed on a regular basis to forgive debt once a borrower meets the criteria. Iowa borrowers represent 13% of the state's population, according to data from Federal Student Aid. The percentage of Iowans who are paying off student loans ranks 14th highest in the U.S., the data show. But on average, those borrowers owe $30,988 per person. Only North Dakotans owe less per person. At $4.98 billion, Iowans between the ages of 35 and 49 collectively owed the most federal student loans out of any age group, which is 37%.
Senate passes bill eliminating gender balance requirements. Iowa's boards and commissions would no longer have to have equal numbers of men and women serving on them under a bill that passed the Iowa Senate. Senate File 2096 was approved by a 32-15 vote on Tuesday. Every Republican present voted in favor of the bill, as did Senator Herman Quirmbach, Democrat of Ames. All other Democrats were opposed. Republicans who support the legislation argue that the decades-old gender balance requirement is no longer necessary and limits the pools of possible appointees to fill state and local boards. If ever there was a time that there was a good idea, it is no longer now, said Jason Schultz, a Republican of Schleswig, the bill's floor manager. The world has changed, and it's time that men and women are selected on their qualifications and nothing else. Those opposed to the bill say many boards and commissions still do not have full gender balance and that existing law already allows for flexibility when making appointments. Multiple Democrats who spoke against the bill Tuesday pointed to their own experiences to demonstrate that gender bias remained an issue. Senator Claire Selce, a Democrat of West Des Moines, who has served on a number of state and local boards, said she probably would not have gotten an opportunity to serve without the gender balance law being in place. And Senator Sarah Trone Garriott, a Democrat of West Des Moines, recalled being rejected by some congregants as a pastor because she was a woman. The world may have changed, but the world still is not fair, Trone Garriott said. Sometimes more qualified women do not get leadership opportunities until that less qualified man is taken out of the equation, she added. Women on the other side of the aisle praised the legislation. Senator Annette Sweeney, a Republican of Iowa Falls, acknowledged that we've all got the stories of being denigrated because of being a woman, but she said she wants women to be appointed to boards and commissions purely based on their qualifications. This is one of the best, happiest votes I'm going to take, Sweeney said. And Senator Chris Conoyer, a Republican of LeClaire, urged Iowans to apply for local and state boards, arguing that the gender balance keeps otherwise qualified women from serving. It's sad to me that some women in this chamber think that women will not be picked if we get rid of this requirement, Conoyer said. According to the Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women and Politics, about 50% of Iowa county boards and commissions had achieved gender balance between 2013 and 2014. Between 2021 and 2023, it was about 62%. The bill's introduction and passage this session comes amid a push by Governor Kim Reynolds to consolidate many of the boards and commissions, which are tailored to specific industries and policies and comprised of appointed members of the public. Legislation introduced in the 2023 session that would have eliminated the gender balance died before making significant progress. Quirnbach, the lone Democrat to vote in favor of the bill on Tuesday, cited rising college and postgraduate graduation rates for women and described the 50% gender balance requirement as a ceiling for women's participation that should be removed. It seems pretty clear that the rising generation of women, if allowed to compete on the basis of their merit, will succeed, and will succeed in greater numbers, he said. I believe that they should be allowed to compete on that merit, he added. An identical version of the legislation has advanced through a committee in the Iowa House. The full chamber must still pass the bill before it could go to Reynolds for her signature.
Prosecutors, Biden accuser had extensive contacts with Russian intelligence. An FBI informant charged with lying to investigators about a fictitious bribery scheme involving President Joe Biden, his son Hunter, and a Ukrainian energy company has had contact with foreign intelligence services, including Russian intelligence agencies, prosecutors alleged in court documents on Tuesday. Alexander Smirnov's contacts included a figure prosecutors called Russian Official One, whom the informant allegedly described as the son of a former high-ranking Russian government official, someone who purportedly controls two groups of individuals tasked with carrying out assassination efforts in a third-party country. Smirnov was indicted last week on charges he lied to the FBI, falsely telling them that executives with now-defunct Ukrainian energy company Burisma had paid Hunter and Joe Biden $5 million each in bribes. The informant's claims have been a pillar of a months-long effort by congressional Republicans to impeach the president. But Special Counsel David Weiss alleged on February 14th that Smirnov had spun a false story, and he was arrested at a Las Vegas airport after returning from overseas. In a 28-page memo submitted Tuesday opposing bail for Smirnov, prosecutors said the former FBI informant admitted to having contacts with foreign intelligence services from countries including Russia. While Smirnov has no ties to the community in Las Vegas, what he does have is extensive foreign ties, including, most troubling and by his own account, contact with foreign intelligence services, including Russian intelligence agencies, and has had such contacts recently, Weiss wrote to the court. Smirnov could use these contacts to resettle outside the United States if released on bail. Weiss said that prosecutors were aware of Smirnov's spy connections because he had shared them with his FBI handlers. Smirnov began working as an FBI informant in 2010 and was authorized to break some laws in that role, prosecutors said. In October 2023, Smirnov reported numerous contacts with the person he described to his FBI handlers as the chief of two Russian assassination squads and as someone with ties to our particular Russian intelligence service, the memo said. The informant also told his handlers of a recent overseas meeting with a second official who he described as a high-ranking member of a specific Russian Foreign Intelligence Service, Weiss said. Lawyers for Smirnov and Hunter Biden couldn't immediately be reached for comment.
And here's a story that gives some general background on that student loan forgiveness article that Linda read earlier. Biden cancels another $1.2 billion in student loan debt. The Biden administration has approved another $1.2 billion in student loan debt discharges for more than 150,000 borrowers nationwide. The latest loan forgiveness announced by the Department of Education on Wednesday targets a specific group of longtime borrowers enrolled in the department's much-touted repayment plan, which adjusts monthly bills based on people's incomes. It comes just a day before a group of federal negotiators is set to discuss broader plans for even more student debt relief. It's also the first batch of forgiveness to come through since the department sped up its timeline last month for implementing President Joe Biden's income-based repayment plan, dubbed Saving with a Valuable Education, or SAVE. Initially, the relief was not set to be approved until later this summer. At that time, the department could not say how many borrowers might get automatic cancellation. The tens of thousands of eligible borrowers had to meet specific set of requirements. In order to make the cut, they had to be enrolled in SAVE. They also had to be in a repayment for at least 10 years on a loan of $12,000 or less. From day one of my administration, I vowed to fix student loan programs so higher education can be a ticket to the middle class, not a barrier to opportunity, Biden wrote in an email set to go out to eligible borrowers. I hope this relief gives you a little more breathing room, the email said. It's not the first time in recent months the president has made direct appeals to some of the millions of borrowers whose student debt the administration is responsible for canceling. Biden sent a similar message to nearly a million borrowers last fall. The White House's consistently drumbeat of loan forgiveness news is part of a political strategy as Biden seeks re-election in November. Despite the griping of congressional Republicans and new court challenges, Biden's team is forging ahead. Research shows Democrats and younger voters tend to reward politicians who deliver on promises of student debt relief.
We only have a long article left in the main sections, and I wouldn't be able to read it before the birthdays. I'll read it from Illinois, Springfield. Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerichs returned nearly $276 million in unclaimed property in 2023, bringing Frerichs' total since taking office in 2015 to more than $1.9 billion, holding more than $5 billion in unclaimed property. From Indiana, Indianapolis, teachers at three could see merit bonuses as high as $40,000 at the end of each school year, thanks to a $12.5 million donation from a trust funded by a group of anonymous donors. And from Kansas, Topeka, legislators, activists, and Kansas Governor Laura Kelly spoke at the Capitol for Black Legislative Day, an all-day event where Black leaders across the state advocate for and learn about issues in the State House. From Minnesota, Minneapolis, a man who killed himself after fatally shooting two police officers and a firefighter in a wooded Minneapolis area neighborhood wasn't legally allowed to have guns after a previous assault conviction and was entangled in a years-long dispute over the custody and financial support of his three oldest children, court records show.